to Once I Watched a Disney, a series on Disflix and Tidbits, where, well, things will get a little bit cringy for the whole month of October. A guest and I will be watching a movie from a list of Disney movies that are either highly criticized, forgotten, ignored, been put on a worst Disney movie ever list, or even nightmare-inducing. Something I've been calling Cringetober. We're gonna watch these movies and give our own opinions on why we think these movies may have gotten a bad rap over the years. Some of these movies the guests or I may have never seen before, so we're all in for a real treat. So for this episode, I have a new guest. I have Cole, who is the writer for TheLaughingPlace.com. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good.
Excited to be here. Very excited
to be here. I'm so glad that you were interested in doing this with me.
Yeah, when I saw some of the options, I was excited.
I was kind of surprised by your pick for that one. I didn't think this movie would be picked at all, but you were right there.
Yeah, I was, you know, this is a childhood movie for me, so it just, the chance to rewatch it, I had to seize the opportunity.
Yeah, I've never actually watched this before, so listener beware, I might tear this apart with my adult mind, so. I know a lot of people that have watched this when it first came out. I completely ignored it when it was in theaters.
It was more of a DVD movie for me.
Oh yeah?
Actually. Okay. I don't know why. I don't think we ever owned it, but I have distinct memories of going to Blockbuster and being like, hey mom, can we rent The Pacifier? And she's like, again? Again?
Oh, Blockbuster, that's dating us right now.
5 to 10 times. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was a good time though. I always loved it as a child. Can't say that those thoughts are going to carry over, but as a kid, I was a big fan.
That's what I've been hearing a lot lately. Well, since you are a new guest to Disflix and Tidbits, I usually ask my guests a couple of Disney questionnaire, and they're really easy, so it's not too hard or anything. So the first question is, how did you first get into Disney?
I think it was just the fact, so I grew up in Southern California, so I've been going to Disneyland since I was a little kid. In fact, the first time I went, I was about 14 days old. Mm. So, you know, when you're going to Disneyland from such a young age, it kind of just runs off on you and just sticks with you. And then in high school, I just started going more with like a friend I had at the time. And that really was what inspired me to get more and more into it. And now here I am, like an uber Disney fan.
Yeah, I kind of followed the same path. I grew up in Southern California and since have moved away, but I remember going every summer and then finding out later that I was only 10 minutes away from the park and surprised that we didn't go at way more often.
I know. You were only going during the summer when you're that close. My mm-hmm. goodness.
I was so mad at my mom when I figured that out.
Yeah. You're like, what? Why did you not just spoil us?
Yeah. Oh, well.
Passes weren't even as crazy priced as they are today. It was definitely a lot more reasonable.
I know. I just kept like thinking back, like, why didn't we go that often? Why? We were 10 minutes
and,
away.
Like, the cheapest, you had the cheap pass. You could get the cheap pass too. That was like barely more than a 1 day park hopper. And then since you're so close, you could go during the week. You don't even have to use the weekend ones.
Yeah.
Wow. This is sad just hearing about it.
No, I'm like so heartbroken. And now my goal is to live near one of the parks at least. I'm working on it. So I guess the next question would be, do you have a favorite Disney movie?
It's a tough one. I waffle a lot between, it's hard for me to choose between Alice in Wonderland and Monsters, Inc. But I think if I were to choose right now, I would go with Monsters, Inc. But Alice in Wonderland is a pretty close second. They always kind of switch off between the two of them.
That's really a tough question because sometimes it's like by mood with me. And like Right now for this week, it's Princess and the Frog because I've been constantly watching that. Okay. But those are two great movies because it's hard to pick from a Pixar and a Disney movie like that.
I know, yeah. They're so different too that it's very hard for me to like decide which one I like more.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite Disney character or a group of characters?
Yes, the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland. I don't know why. I love everything about it. He's like, who are you? That one always cracks me up. Just, he's the best. I don't know why. I love that I get to ride him on the ride. Big fan of the caterpillar.
Okay. I can see the connection there. And yeah. Do you have a favorite villain then?
Yes, I have to go with Maleficent. She's so evil. She's the epitome of evil. And there's just something about her. I think it was, yeah, exactly. I think it was Fantasmic was what really got me into her, just seeing her transform into the dragon. I think that was what really was like, this is the villain. Surprisingly, I've never seen the first movie though, but I gotta see it before I go see the second one.
Oh, the live action?
I'll get there. Yeah, I've never seen the live action one, but I try to see every Disney movie when it comes out in theaters, so gotta get to it before the second one leaves theaters.
Yeah. I wasn't much of a fan of the first one, but I have a weird particular taste for some of these movies. Like, I like the live-action Lion King, but I didn't like the Maleficent, so I'm weird.
I've heard a lot of people didn't like the Maleficent, and I can get... Really, there's only like a couple of the live action ones that I have liked, so I'm probably leaning towards I won't like it that much, but we'll see.
Yeah, I hear it's like bonkers, the new one. I'm kind of scared to go watch
it. Yeah, I'm kind of intrigued by the second one since it's like its own thing, you know? That's what has me interested.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite kind of Disney movie, like the superhero movies, princess movies? Just the musicals, live action, or just animated?
I would say taken as a whole, probably Star Wars. If that does that count in this?
Yeah, I guess that would count. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it would have to be Star Wars. Just as a whole, would be my favorite. Big Star Wars fan. I got tickets for the marathon at the El Capitan for Rise of Skywalker, so I'm pretty excited for that. It's gonna be a good time.
And then the next question it's put into two parts since we're almost at the end of the year. The first part would be, has there been a movie this year that has exceeded your expectations or you got really excited about? And is there one towards the end of this year that you're really, really excited about? And it does not have to be Disney.
I think the one that's excited me the most is Aladdin. Even if I include Disney or not Disney, I think that I did not go in with very high hopes of Aladdin. When I ranked like the Disney movies at the beginning of the year, the only one I had below it was Dumbo. So that one really exceeded my expectations. I thought that they did a really fun job with it. Like, I had a really good time watching it. And like Rise of Skywalker is the easy answer for which one I'm most looking forward to, just even of all movies.
Yeah.
But I'm also really looking forward to Frozen 2. Those trailers have been so good.
Oh yeah.
And a non-Disney choice of Ford versus Ferrari, though I guess that's 20th Century Fox, but still. Very much looking forward to that one.
I haven't heard of the Ford versus Ferrari one. I heard that they were making it, but I haven't seen.
Yeah, they have a couple trailers out.
Oh, I might have to look that up then. I'm more interested in the Knives Out that's coming out here by Ryan Johnson.
That's also very high on my list too. Yeah, that looks awesome.
So yeah, those are the end of the questions you passed. Now we know a little bit more about you. So now into the movie that you picked, and it is The Pacifier from 2005.
Yes.
This one was interesting. Most of the movies that I picked for lists for the list of Cringetober were all movies that I found on the bottom of the worst Disney movie lists. So I've heard of it but never watched this one, so I kind of forget that this is a Disney movie.
I didn't know it was a Disney movie, to be honest. That's why when I saw it on that list, I was kind of excited. I was like, oh, this is a Disney movie?
Yeah, it just... But it does follow a big trope that movies follow along with that date back into the 60s, and that's... I was looking up if there was a name for it, and I guess there is. It's called Tough Guys in Tutus.
Yep, the Mr. Mom scenario is what I like to think of it as.
Mr. Mom, what was the other ones like? Kindergarten Cop, Mr. Nanny, the Tooth Fairy, the Game Plan. Like, all of those kind of fall under this. Like, you take a tough guy that's in, like, the action films, Vin Diesel, and then put him with kids.
Yep. Exactly.
And, yeah, I didn't know how to take this film, and I'm just kind of, like, meh about it. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but didn't age well, I guess.
I was kind of hoping it was going to be a little more, it's so bad, it's great. But there was a lot of points where, just like you're saying, just kind of meh, where I was like, oh, I was kind of hoping I could make fun of this movie a little bit more, but I guess not.
It was just there, and I can see why it was overlooked, and I can also see from, like, a younger point of view why it was a favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, like I was saying earlier, I just, all the time, would watch this movie.
It may have been the physical comedy. There's a lot of it in here.
Yeah.
But it's more serious than comedy, which I found weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, especially, like, just, like, I don't know. It doesn't really fit into, like, it fits into the Disney type of, like, tropes you would see, but at the same time, not at all.
Yeah. It just, like, it had something off, but I couldn't pinpoint what it was. Like, it, I'm sure Cheaper by the Dozen is under Disney. I keep, like, forgetting if it is or not. And that kind of had, so that kind of had that Disney family feel to it. This one kind of lost any kind of Disney magic, which kind of steered me away. Like, I just found myself... noticing other things around my house rather than paying attention to this, because I already knew the plot. The plot laid itself out, and I wasn't worried about missing anything if I didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, to correct myself, Cheaper by the Dozen was 20th Century Fox, so now it is Disney, but at the time it was not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because it kind of feels like a Disney film.
Yeah, no, it definitely does, and it'll fit well with, like, what they're talking about with, like, Disney Plus and reviving it. I think it'll fit well with that plan.
Yeah. But, yeah, this movie... So
I get what you're saying, though, about being distracted.
Yeah.
I was the same way, where I was, like... Because things started coming back to me from when I was younger, so I was like, oh, I'm remembering what's happened, and they also... just the whole time exactly basically tell you what's gonna happen next.
Yeah,
there's no real mystery.
Exactly. So for the listener at home, I'm gonna play the trailer for you right now so you can get a sense of what this movie is if you haven't watched it or if you don't remember it.
Navy SEAL Shane Wolf has seen action in every corner of the globe.
Somalia.
I've directed rescue missions.
Serbia.
I've directed stealth air attacks.
Bosnia.
I've choreographed amphibious landings all around the world.
But for his next assignment, he's going to the one place his skills mean nothing.
Suburbia.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
From Walt Disney Pictures. in association with Spyglass Entertainment.
Let me get this right. Protecting those kids is a matter of national security?
Lieutenant Shane Wolf is a man on a mission.
The important thing now is the safety of my children.
Mrs. Plummer, I've dealt with...
Oh, my God!
That's Gary. Sorry.
He expects discipline.
I'm not going to have time to learn all of your names. So you are Red 1, Red 2, Red 3, Red Baby...
He has got to go.
But now...
Please tell me that was the duck.
He's in for some big changes.
Red Baby.
From the director of Bringing Down the House.
What is it?
It's a minivan.
A minivan? No. Think of it like a Bradley assault vehicle.
They may not understand his methods.
Can you tell me a story?
Once there was a family of elves. The elf team decided on an L ambush and laid down a heavy suppressive fire on the gnomes.
But the last guy they ever expected may be exactly...
Let's move out!
...what they need.
I've never left a man behind.
Duty calls.
We're good.
Vin Diesel.
Somebody's got to give this punk a talking to. Why don't you pick on someone your own size?
Oh, that is so gross.
Come on, I'll be your daddy. The chicken wing. Crowbar. Finally. The pacifier.
The pacifier.
We're going to be late.
Not on my watch.
Yeah, it's just like every single tough man in a tutu kind of movie. A tough guy, in this case, it's Vin Diesel's character, which I don't even remember his name, gets put in a situation where he has to watch a bunch of kids. Yeah, Shane.
Shane Wolf, I think, is what it was.
Mm-hmm. And Vin Diesel, we all know, is famous for the Fast and Furious franchise. And that's
very hard to see him not there.
Yes, exactly. I don't think I've watched anything with him other than Fast and the Furious and Guardians of the Galaxy, which he only says three words. Barely in that movie. That doesn't count.
Yeah. Honestly, but, that's his best performance.
Yeah. But I've never watched Riddick. I heard that's great, so,
but
I never
I think
watched
that's
it.
Kind of like. I think that's kind of like the same Fast and the Furious vibe, though. And okay. So is like XXX, which is the other one that he's known for. They're all kind of like the same types of movies.
Yeah.
So this is like the only thing where he's stepping outside of his normal Vin Diesel thing.
Yeah, he's very like one note. And you can tell in the beginning of this film, like he does not want to act at all.
I'm like, wait, is this what Vin Diesel looks like when he tries to act? Like, huh. Who knew?
Oh, man. I kind of laughed to myself in the beginning because he plays a Navy SEAL. And the more that I watched him act in the beginning and try to be like, oh, I'm a robotic soldier and I'm going to do this, this, and this. I kept thinking, how is this comedy going to work? Like, I can't see him in doing anything kind of comedic. I don't know.
No. I feel like in the end product, he did okay.
Yeah.
It's not the worst performance I've ever seen. It's not going to win him any awards, but it could have been a lot worse. At least he tried to be funny.
That's true. He did try. And like you said, it was okay. And I was expecting to have more of a cringe factor from him trying to be funny. But he was always kind of the butt of the joke rather trying to be funny like, say, The Rock does, where he adds puns and tries to get in on the joke. Him, it's just like things happened to him.
Yeah, exactly. And because I am not a Vin Diesel fan. Don't like really his performances in anything. But I was like, you know, you did okay in this. Like, I thought I was going to cringe more at watching Vin Diesel than I did.
Yeah. There was a couple cringy things that I noticed. And I don't know if this was on purpose, but Brad Garrick's character, the vice principal, his
he's
character
a lot.
was so cringy. I did not like him at all.
He is a lot. You're like, can you stop talking about wrestling teenage boys? That is not what I want to be hearing about in this movie. That is just weird. Like,
and he kept on like, it, like the big running joke was Vin Diesel's pecs, and like even the little kid in the beginning calls him boobs. But when he meets like Brad Garrett's character, he keeps on like saying something about his pecs. Like, he's like, oh, you got you're like strong as like an ox, and you have legs coming out of your arms. Like, what is going on? Like, it got crazy because I didn't know where he was going with this conversation.
It was a very much of a 2005 movie attitude of something that like you couldn't do today, because like there's so much more subtext that at the time, like, there really wasn't that much subtext with it. But today you're like, oh my God, what? What is happening? This does not seem right. Like,
yeah. And another thing with Brad's character again, when they catch the older boy and he finds like a swastika armband and like he dyed his hair, I'm like, oh no, what is going on now? This took a left turn, and then it turned out to be The Sound of Music, but still I'm like, what is going on?
For a brief second I forgot about that part, and then eventually once I saw him like running out of the house, I was like, oh, he's going to Sound of Music, and it all came back to me. But I was like, wait, what? I forgot there was a Nazi subplot in this. And then turns out there wasn't, thank God, because that would have not fit in the movie at all. That would have been way out of left field.
No, I was just freaking out a little bit when I saw that. I'm like, where are they going with this? Because I didn't like really think about that. That was the only thing that blindsided me about this movie. Like, everything else was predictable, but this was like, oh, okay, now I get it.
You have like a brief like 3 minutes where you're like, okay, are we hitting a real left turn right now? Because that was a cringy moment for me.
Yeah. There was one part where I did laugh, and I don't know why I laughed, was the driving test with the girl, Brittany Snow's character, the first time with the actual instructor. I don't know why that made me laugh. I just wrote it in my notes.
That one made me laugh. I think I feel like I watched it forever ago when I literally watched it last night. But I think that definitely the physical humor still got me. I'm a big physical humor guy. I really like physical humor. And like a lot of the gags that they did, it's like, these are silly, but I like them.
Mm-hmm.
I fell for it. I fell for their tricks. They got me on that.
Another good scene that I kind of liked was the reason why this movie got the name that it did. And that was the wrestling match with the vice principal. And for those of you at home, the reason why it's called the pacifier, is also because he is a babysitter, but also in this wrestling move that he makes, he's like trying to show up this wrestling coach, and he shows off four moves, and the last move is the pacifier, where he shoves the guy's hand in his mouth.
And thus we have the chicken wing. The armbar, the crowbar, or my personal favorite, the pacifier.
Oh, they said it.
Yeah. I had that same reaction. I was like, there's the name of the movie.
Oh, it's Family Guy getting into us.
The scene I really liked was actually the kung fu scene when he's facing off with like the ninjas and stuff.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was a really well choreographed kung fu scene. And I was watching it with my friend who watches a lot of kung fu movies. And he was like, wow, yeah, this like looks really good. This is better than a lot of the kung fu you see in movies that are like kung fu movies.
Yeah, I did like that too. It was very well choreographed. And a little interesting tidbit, those are actually Jackie Chan's stunt team.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
They went all that was out the that. One tidbit I found.
Yeah,
he was supposed to play that role.
Oh, really? I didn't get that part.
Jackie Chan was. Yeah, Jackie Chan was originally attached to star as Vin Diesel's character. So that's why a lot of like the stunts that you, or the in the Kung Fu scene, how he's just using random stuff and not real weapons, that's very much a Jackie Chan move in his movies, is he'll just take random things and turn them into weapons. And then they basically had Vin Diesel do the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that then.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was interesting. The other thing too that was kind of written for Jackie Chan was the duck that keeps appearing, and you're like, why is this duck here? Because the duck is like their guard duck or whatever.
Yeah.
And it keeps reappearing through the whole movie. But apparently, originally in the script, when it was Jackie Chan, he kept talking about how he wanted to eat the duck. And it was a running gag through the whole thing that he was threatening to eat the duck.
See, even with Vin Diesel, he could have done that too. That would have been a joke he
But might have not got, I don't know. There's something funnier about Jackie Chan doing it, I guess.
Yeah.
Like,
he's better at timing humor than Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel would have been like, I'm gonna eat that duck. I'm gonna eat the duck, family.
Oh man, he just was not good for this role. Not like he was bad, it was just, you can tell it wasn't written for him, because he tried so hard. Like,
yeah,
his character going back and forth, like in the beginning he's supposed to be like the straight-laced soldier who's very patriotic and does what he's told, and then a quarter into the movie he's like trying to be Mr. Mom, basically, and saying, da-da-da-da, do this,
yeah,
do this, and do this. Breaks down the kid's door, and then he's the one cowering against the teenager. I'm like, wait a second. That...
Yeah.
No.
And then they all become friends.
Yeah. And then
he goes... from, like, hating each other to breaks down door. They're all the best of friends.
Yeah. It just... It wasn't believable, but, like, the fact that he would be the heart that he was, and then cower to the teenager, and then become the heart again, and then become friends, and then become a heart. Like, no, you have to pick a lane. Pick a lane!
Also, just the idea that they would send one of their, like, lieutenants to go and babysit these kids. I know he's supposed to be, like, looking for... like the big weapon or whatever, but like, come on, this is the guy you're gonna go send to babysit these children.
Yeah. If anything, just a bodyguard and then have a nanny in place.
I know, right?
But I guess the nanny up and left, so
that was also one of my favorite, that my most cringeworthy moment, but also made me laugh the most, was, so, like, a big subplot is how the mom is going to help them, like, find the key to get into where, like, this big secret government weapon is. And that's the whole reason that she's gone and that Vin Diesel has to, like, be there and take care of the kids. And after 2 weeks, they go, she keeps trying to guess what the password is. So then they're like, okay, after 2 weeks, what do you got? And she pulls off her ring and says, oh, I should have known the whole time. My angel. And they're like, yep, that's the password.
Yeah.
It took you 2 weeks to figure that out? Your ring has been on your hand the whole time.
I know. Like, that took an extra 2 weeks. That, I don't know. But they had to push the plot.
That one, yeah. I was like, at least don't say 2 weeks. Make it, like, 2 days or something. Everything that happened in that movie could have happened in 2 days. I'd have believed it.
Yeah, it could have. I mean, most movies happen like in half of a day, so it's not a big stretch. I think they were just trying to push, like, have a reason for the nanny to be pushed farther, or maybe to make it more believable that all of the resolutions happened within a week.
Yeah. I think that they were just trying to make sure that Vin Diesel could go and direct a Sound of Musical production with no previous directorial experience.
Yeah. While all watching, like, a toddler, an infant, teaching the oldest to drive, teaching the middle child to do kung fu and kick the Boy Scouts' butts and in a very elaborate way.
All while directing The Sound of Music.
Yeah. Okay.
That one also made me laugh. That was a very good one. I was like, nice.
Yeah, there's just it's kind of a paint by numbers story. I mean, we all seen that before. So I knew I wasn't gonna be surprised about anything. So it's just like for me, it's in a category of not good, not bad type of thing.
Yeah. It definitely did not live up to my childhood memories of it, but I can't say I won't watch it again in the future.
Huh. See, I probably would not watch it, probably because I waited until now to watch it. It does put a damper.
I think I need about 10 years before I could watch it again. Maybe like when I have kids or something, then I'll rewatch it. Until then, not gonna happen.
Yeah, I get that. So let's see what it actually did in the box office. I was kind of surprised by the numbers for this. So the budget was $56 million, which is standard, I guess, but I'm kind of wondering. It's actually pretty low, but given the fact that there's not a lot of special effects here.
There's not a ton of effect. Honestly, Vin Diesel probably commanded a lot of that.
Yeah.
Too.
I mean, it was kind of a big named cast in a way. I mean, we had Carol Kane in there, who's a Broadway singer. Brad Garrett, who I guess he just got off of Everybody Loves Raymond.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brittany Snow, who was like the big teenage actress at the time then. And then Lauren Graham, who was on that CW show. I can't remember. Gilmore Girls, right? Is that her?
Yes. No,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's her.
So I guess I can see where the money came from, but it's basically Vin Diesel, you're right. What they got back was a surprising $198.6 million.
Yeah, for what that movie was, pretty big haul.
Yeah, kind of surprised by that.
That's worldwide.
Yeah, that's worldwide.
I feel like it has to be. There's no way that could just be the domestic box. that's crazy. Oh, I did see something about the DVD sales. Yeah. I think I remember. What it said was that it's like one of the highest selling DVD sales. Like, especially from movies of like 2005, but it's mainly because this one guy has almost 3,000 copies of it.
Yeah.
Why anyone would want 3,000 copies of this movie is beyond me. I don't even want one.
I know. I read that and started laughing so much, and I lost the page that I was on. I think that was on IMDb, but yeah. Did you know that they were going to make a sequel?
Really?
Yeah. In
2000... Disney Plus is waiting for it. They need content.
Yeah, there you go. Another sequel. I guess in 2015, Vin Diesel said there was going to be a sequel. But I think that has been shut down.
That's when Vin Diesel wasn't sure if he was going to be able to keep making the Fast and Furious money forever. And now he's like, oh no, this can sustain me the rest of my life. I'll be good.
Disney money is the best money.
It's true.
So let's see what the critics actually said. In Rotten Tomatoes, the critics gave it a great big number of 20%.
Ooh, high class right there.
But the audience gave it a 59%.
Not bad. I think that's higher than The Last Jedi.
Oh yeah, but we won't talk about that. That's a whole nother argument right there. Metacritic gave it a
8,000 reviews too from users.
Yeah.
How many people have seen this movie?
I didn't see how many reviews there were for that one.
So 129 critic reviews, and then 388,000 audience reviews.
Wow. Everybody reviewed.
Okay, something seems up. Yeah, something seems up with that, because I just looked at the audience reviews. I don't know if they like took them away, because I was like just looking to compare to like the Last Jedi one, and that one had 212,000 reviews. Force Awakens says 231,000. How does The Pacifier have 150,000 more user reviews than these Star Wars movies?
I don't know. What are you guys doing out there? What? Why are you rating The Pacifier? The first one this I see is funny, but it kind of sucked. 3 stars.
The game has 66,000 user ratings. It has 300 and something thousand more than Endgame.
Okay, we, listener out there, have you reviewed this movie, and why are you reviewing this movie?
And only this movie.
388,000 reviews for The Pacifier.
This is just absurd. I know that it came out in 2005, so that gives people more time, but still, that's
Once it leaves theaters, why would you go back is my question.
I guess it might be that time. Maybe it's just the time frame, because I just looked up Revenge of the Sith, which was 2005. And that has 33 million.
Oh. Yeah, it could be time. Okay.
Okay. That's what we're going to claim it as, because what else could possibly
possess that many people to read it?
Wow.
The next place that I grabbed another review from is Metacritic, and they gave it a 30%. And then IMDb gave it a 5.6 out of 10. So, kind of fails altogether. Failing grade.
Those are pretty low ones. Didn't do so hot.
Oh, but it made its money back, so that's what matters.
That's true. And it made its marketing money back, too. So it definitely turned a bit of a profit. And with all of those DVD sales, it really did well. Whoever that guy is buying all of them.
I'm actually surprised there isn't a sequel, honestly. But
it came at a very transitional time, because of it being at a time where it still was probably technically considered an Eisner film.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't make as much sense with it not being like on a level of Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, obviously, Iger was going to continue those types of movies, but he wasn't going to continue a series like The Pacifier.
Yeah, that's true. Make money on what you actually produced in the first place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't see much of any of these tough guy and tutus tropes coming from Disney that much.
Yeah.
After that.
Well, I think the game plan was, right?
Yeah. And isn't...
I think Tooth Fairy also was.
A game plan... Well, Tooth Fairy is now. It's a Fox.
Is now... That was also Fox?
Yeah.
Okay.
The game plan is...
Game plan was. I just looked.
Yeah. So, 2 years later, they did make another one. But they found their star with him.
I don't know why The Rock... That's so interesting that The Rock made, like, two of the same types of movies that close together. Like, what an odd choice.
I don't know. He was trying to diversify his resume, I guess. Yes.
Oh my god, there was a Tooth Fairy 2 starring Larry the Cable Guy?
What?
You learn something every day.
Now we're just going down rabbit holes.
Yep. See, it's Alice in Wonderland. I go down the rabbit hole, and then who knows what happens.
Oh, man. All right.
But I did some research on like the people behind it that I thought was interesting. Yeah, so first it was written by a few of the writers from Reno 911, which is very interesting. You can kind of see how some of like that physical humor comes out in the movie, but they definitely had to like tame down what they were used to doing.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. And then it was directed by Adam Shankman, who did Hairspray, Rock of Ages, Bedtime Stories. So like, this is almost like, I don't know, I feel like this was like a middle of the road. I really like Hairspray. I'm a big Hairspray fan. That's one of my favorite movies. I know it's not like the greatest of all films, but I have a good time with it.
Oh, there's
something
about
seeing Christopher Walken and John Travolta dancing with each other that it gets me every time.
I am a big fan of any kind of Hairspray movie coming out.
I feel like he made sense as the director. That was like his first like kind of biggish thing though that he directed with like a real budget and stuff like that, from what I could tell, like, or at least that had any type of success.
Then he went straight into musicals there for a bit.
Yeah,
that's an interesting
choice. He did all the Step Up movies too.
Oh, okay. Wow.
He didn't direct them, but he produced them. Okay. Oh, he had made Cheaper by the Dozen 2 in the same year as The Pacifier. Interesting.
I love the comedy in Cheaper by the Dozen, probably because of the actors in that one as opposed to this.
Yeah. Steve Martin is great.
That's really interesting. I'm kind of flabbergasted now. Comparing those two movies. Like, how did that work? But
yeah, that he made them within like 6 weeks of each other.
Oh, that must have been a low budget too for Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yeah, I don't think that one got too much too much budget.
No.
Oh, that says $60 million. That's an even bigger budget.
Oh, they had a lot of big-named actors in that one, too.
It looks like really the only big names I see are Steve Martin, Bonnie Hunt, Eugene Levy, and Carmen Electra.
But still, given the date or the time, the time, they were big then.
That's true. He was like Eugene Levy coming off American Pie.
Hilary Duff, Piper Perabo.
Oh, I forgot. I didn't see Hilary Duff there. She got by me.
And then the oldest kid, I think, didn't he play Superman in Smallville? Yeah.
He did.
So it like,
I never was into TV at that time.
But yeah, I think they had a bigger star power with that one, while this one had like Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
You know.
And it was a sequel too, so they could throw some more money at it. They're like, you want me to come back? Okay, but only for this much. Whereas Vin Diesel's like, you want me to look after this kid the whole movie and wear two kids on myself at the same time?
Let's go into our likes and dislikes. What are your top three best moments of this film, if you can have three?
All the lines I would put at number three just because they were so ridiculous that they killed me. Like, one of the lines I really loved was when he's like, do you mind if I just sit around the school all day and watch over the kids?
Yeah.
I was like, what did you just say?
Permission to watch these kids?
Like 10 minutes of the movie. Yeah. He spends 10 minutes of the movie just like watching, and I was like, what? that was a lot. So like lines like that were really funny. Number two is probably the ninja fight. I like that one a lot. Okay. And number one for me is the Peter Panda dance, because I always loved that as a kid. That was one of my favorite parts of the movie. I always thought it was so cool. It was like basically the low budget version of the Indiana Jones 3 finale. Kind of what it is, except he doesn't have a journal. Instead, he has to remember this song. But like, it's a very similar type of thing. You can tell that they had this a similar inspiration going.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So I don't have like the best parts. Let's see. I gotta agree with you with the ninja choreography. That was pretty entertaining. The driving test, which actually made me laugh out loud.
That was funny. I like that too.
There's a bee in the car. I cracked up. I don't know. And I'm kind of struggling with a third one. There's not a lot that I can pick up from it.
I know, that's fair.
Yeah. I'm just going to leave it at those two. I'm sorry.
Nope, that's totally fair. You know, you didn't watch that at least 10 times as a kid, so it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Let's see. So, your top least favorite parts of the movie?
I guess the overall meh-ness.
Yeah.
Just how I felt meh for so long. That's definitely high on that list. Let's see. A lot of the things that were bad, I was able to justify because, like, they made me laugh at least.
Hmm.
The Nazi subplot was weird. They could have done Sound of Music in a better way than that. That felt off to me. And my number one is how suddenly at the end of the movie, he just, like, kisses Lauren Graham. And I'm like, what? Like, I get that you guys were kind of hinting at it, but also, like, ask her on a date first, man. Come on. Don't just assume. What's going on here?
But they needed the happily ever after and they ran out of time.
I know, yeah. It just felt very weird and abrupt.
Yeah, I get that. Man. Okay, so my top three, let's see. Yeah, the Nazi thing bugged me because I did not know where they were going with that. That kind of freaked me out. The baby vomit gag in the beginning, I rolled my eyes at, and it bugged me. Like, I like physical humor sometimes, but that one was just way too forced. Like, okay. And then the number one is gotta be the vice principal. He overall, like, they were trying to have a creepy vice principal guy and they nailed it and he made me cringe the entire movie.
Brad Garrett's a very likable guy and they made him very unlikable.
I know. He kept calling the boy creeper and, like, was checking out Vin Diesel all the time, but in a very creepy way.
We have to take a second too to talk about the outfit he wears for the wrestling fight.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. I'm like, Brad, you can leave a little more to our imagination. Like, we're okay with that. Please, sir. Please.
There was one thing that I just thought was weird that I looked up was they actually did the whole musical of The Sound of Music.
Wait, really?
They taped it all and we only got the 16 going on 17 song.
30 seconds?
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
I know, right?
Why would they... What? They made these actors learn all of Sound of Music for 30 seconds?
I know, right? Oh, and another thing that bugged me was, like, okay, the teenage kid looked like a teenager. He really did. But all the people in the play looked like they were 30 years old. They didn't even try.
Yep. Yeah, they all were, like, real old. Oh, that's what, another one going off of that, and with creepy gym teacher, or creepy vice principal, is he like gets mad at the teenage kid for basically for singing under the bleachers to himself, and he's like, you can't do that. Why can't you do that? Why can't you sing under the bleachers by yourself? What's stopping you from doing that?
I know. He had a vendetta for no reason. Like, there was no quarrel with the dad in him. It was just like, I'm going to pick on him and call him a creeper. Like, what?
It's because he didn't go to practice. And it was like, clearly this kid does not want to be on the wrestling team, man.
Yeah. Take a hint. Usually most coaches are like, see ya, I have other students or wrestlers.
Yeah, the coaches are like, yeah, I don't care. Come on, get out of here.
Yeah, this movie definitely had its problems. But yeah, I would like to know from the listeners out there if you have watched this movie before or haven't watched this movie before. And if you have watched this movie, did you like it as a kid? If you watched it as a kid, and like, I recommend rewatching it like Cole did and seeing if it lives up.
It will not live up.
But I would like to know everybody's thoughts on this. We all have different opinions, and I just am more interested in what the opposing opinion is. Like, why, what you love about this movie and what you did not like about this movie. And if you hit me up on Twitter at DisflixTidbit or email me at DisflixAndTidbits@gmail.com, I will shout out your opinion on the next episode, possibly. Ooh. So, so exciting. Get a shout out.
Can I share my opinion too?
Yeah. So thank you, Cole, for joining me on, like, yes,
thank you for having me. Yeah, it was a good time.
It was great. We just dumped on a classic Disney film.
Yeah, and we meh cringed, you know? It wasn't a full cringe. It was a meh cringe. Yeah.
Well, I guess we should probably rate it from a grade scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah. I think right around a 5. Ah! Is where I would put it, right in the middle of meh.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's just a big old ball of meh.
Yeah, just, I feel like 5 is the perfect meh score.
Yeah.
It's just right there.
There in the middle. So, Cole, if you would like to plug anything that you're a part of, talk about thelaughingplace.com a little bit more. The show is yours.
Yeah, so for Laughing Place, I write primarily about extinct Disney attractions, though I do some other writing outside of that isn't necessarily related, like box office predictions and stuff like that. So you can follow like my personal Twitter at KFCman13, or you can also follow us on Laughing Place at Laughing_Place, where you can find all the articles I do and that other people are doing. It's a cool place. I think we have like a pretty good reputation within the Disney Twitter community because we try our best to not put anything out there before things are official or anything. We pride ourselves on our accuracy.
As you should.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a good time. I am running out of articles about extinct attractions since I've been writing about them for over 3 years now. But, you know, we'll just keep seeing attractions go away and then I'll keep finding some new things to talk about.
All right. And of course, I will leave all that information down in the show notes below for you guys to check out after the episode is done. And thank you again, Cole. It's been really fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And don't forget, we're not just watching movies, we're making memories, no matter how cringy they are.
Why are your boobs so big?
They're not boobs.
Do you have to wear a bra? So will my boobs get as big as yours someday?